You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody.
Thursday morning, about 36 hours after State of the Union, but I don't think there's that much to chew on there, quite frankly. I think it's pretty much forgotten by now. And we have spent, in our many, many years together, Matt, the time has just flown by. But we have spent a good amount of time dissecting the fissures and factions on the right, which is a fascinating subject, and I have been greatly enlightened by your analysis of the subject. But we have not spent as much time. We've spent some, not as much time on the left. And I don't know if that's because it's not as interesting to people, or because the train wreck of the right is such a it's such a magnet of attention. But I know, based on our past chit chat this morning, that it's top of your mind right now. What is happening within the Democratic Party?
No, that's right, Bill. Look, I think that we focused on the right for the right reasons. I think they were going through this identity crisis and this time in the wilderness and this chaos, and the Democrats were more disciplined. They seemed to have it together more, partly because they had a president. Barack Obama, when you have a president, that gives you a certain amount of unity, a certain amount of party discipline and loyalty. And Republicans were radicalized by virtue of their hatred of Obama. And now I think the shoe is on the other foot. I think it's now Democrats' time to be radicalized by their hatred and anger at Donald Trump. And I think it makes they're now going through the identity crisis, the growing pains, and I think it makes them more interesting.
Flesh out a little bit, because you look at most polling, you know, Trump's numbers are still terrible. Every trial I see, no matter what the candidate is, whether it's Biden or Bernie or Warren or whoever, they're beating Trump. Nancy Pelosi is still ruling the House with an iron fist. You know, her numbers have really shot up in the past month. So, you know, what is it about the Democrats right now that make you think they're going off the rails?
Well, before I go into the litany of things, let me say that using the Republicans as an example, I think it's fair to say they had some good times too. They won two midterms while all this craziness was going on, and they managed to elect Donald Trump. Now, I think it's bad for the country. I think it's arguably bad for conservatism and the Republican Party, but they did some winning during that time. Now, what they did not do was they did not beat Barack Obama, who was reelected. And I think that's why Democrats have a real problem here. They have a golden opportunity to beat Donald Trump. He seems to be pretty vulnerable, and yet Democrats are going through a lot of trouble. Now, I will concede one point. I think you and I were both right about this, about Nancy Pelosi. What one wonders, in light of the dumpster fire taking place in the Democratic Party right now, and it's pretty amazing how bad things have gone for them in the past couple of months, but the one thing they have is Nancy Pelosi, and one wonders what it would be like absent Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, I think there was a rookie in that seat during the shutdown. It'd been a much different story the last month. I don't know if there was I don't think there's been a Pelosi-type figure in the Republican Party over the last several years. Boehner couldn't control his caucus in the same way.
McConnell's the best most analogous would be Mitch McConnell. I don't think he's quite there, but he's as close as it gets.
But and even McConnell, I mean, you look at just the nomination of Trump, period. I mean, that was a reflection of a weak establishment. The establishment did not want Trump to be the nominee, yet they fractured among several candidates, and there was no force saying, we're going to shut this down now and tear Trump to shreds, get behind an alternative, and be done with this. McConnell, who said privately, we're going to drop Trump like a hot rock, did not do that. And in fact, linked to him even more.
I mean, Nancy Pelosi is very tough and she's off to a great start. But this process of the chaos on the left has only just begun. And it's, I mean, I'm going to go through some of the things that are happening right now. It's a disaster. We'll see how Nancy Pelosi looks in if she's still there in 5 years, which that's a huge if, after going through. Remember this thing that happened on the right? It started around 2009 and lasted for, you know, a decade or more. I mean, we're now, I mean, I guess you could say it's over now, but it lasted for 7, 8 years, however long. Nancy was at the beginning of this process.
So give it to me straight, Matt.
Yeah.
What is happening in the Democratic Party that presents a bad face to the average American?
Bad face, black face. Number one. In Virginia, two of the top three Democrats have been admitted, in one case photographically, admitted and then rescinded the admission in blackface, and the other case admittedly in blackface. Two of the three top Democrats in the state of Virginia. The other one is accused sexual, I don't even know what the word would be.
Sexual assault.
Assault. And I guess we could say credibly accused. I don't know. I think I said that the question is, when have we used that term in the past to describe people? And do we believe every woman? And that's part of the problem Democrats have, I think, is if you look at what they said about Dr. Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh, do they then have to apply that same standard, which was an accusation to Justin Fairfax, the lieutenant governor of Virginia. So that's just one of the things. Do you want to talk about it, or do you want me to keep going?
I mean, I'm happy to go one by one. I do think that it might be better if you kept going, because I think individually,
we could get bogged down. Yeah, definitely.
Why don't you just go to the list very quickly, then we can talk about it in total. I think it'll be better.
Okay, so you've got the 2020 candidates. Elizabeth Warren, how many times do things have to come out and does she have to apologize? And the latest is that she signed some Texas bar card in her own handwriting calling herself an American Indian, which she pretty clearly is not. And not just because it's tribes who get to determine who is a Native American or not, but because I'm probably more Native American than she is. But this would imply that she used that status potentially to advance, or at least an attempt to advance her career. And making matters worse, it seems likely that there may be, she suggested that more may come out. So that's not, this is like a story that may not go away, and it's been lingering, and it's a death by a thousand cuts. And obviously Trump has been also mocking her over this for years now. You've got Tulsi Gabbard, who we've talked about her sort of bad campaign rollout, problems with her campaign.
I thought she had the Tulsi 2020 hats already.
She's been endorsed. Yeah, you know what? I canceled those. She was endorsed by the former Grand Wizard of the KKK, David Duke, which she, of course, does not accept, we should say. She rejects that endorsement. And then she now says that Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad, who used chemical weapons against his own people, is not an enemy of the United States. That's something controversial, I suppose, I would assume. You've got Kamala Harris, who said...
Kamala, I believe.
I think it's Kamala.
Kamala. It's comma like a comma. In a sentence, Kamala.
I'm still saying Demi Moore. Is it Demi?
I don't know.
Come on, people.
Don't know.
Kamala. Is it Beto or Beto?
I never got that right. There's actually an ad that Kamala did in her Senate campaign, which is all about how to pronounce her name. So
if you go to YouTube and
Google it's Kamala, you'll get the proper pronunciation.
Kamala. Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
I guess the biggest problem for her would be that that town hall for CNN where she basically said that we should do away with private insurance in favor of Medicare for all. Now, she kind of walked that back, but there's video of her very flippantly saying, let's just get rid of private insurance. And the reason this is harmful is it harkens back to the canard that if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Now it's like if you like your insurance, you can keep your insurance. Are Americans going to want someone to completely, once again, uproot whatever they have going, as bad as healthcare may be, to mess with the whatever you've cobbled together? That could be a problem. You've got continuing, I don't even want to say flirtation, dabbling in anti-Semitism amongst multiple of the young, newly elected Democrats. The most recent, I think, being the AOC and who's the guy from England? No.
Jeremy Corbyn.
There you go. Corbyn. So I don't even know. I think I probably – oh, yeah, there's Amy Klobuchar, her Minnesota Nice, where she allegedly – but this comports with what I've been hearing for a while – is very mean to people who work for her and has them – do personal errands for her, like washing her dishes. What am I forgetting?
I'm not here to help you, Matt. So you guys remember them yourself.
Oh, yeah. There's the 70% tax, hiking taxes to 70% for the I forgot. Democrats are now in favor of third trimester abortions, which in some cases, according to at least Virginia Governor Northam, that would include aborting a baby after the baby is born, after a consultation, of course, and keeping the baby comfortable. So it seems like Democrats are taking some left-wing positions that may not serve them well. Look, this is like – this should be – what's the whole thing? Like, you had one job. Like if the goal is to beat Donald Trump and – maybe to win like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, some of those states, I'm not sure that this is the way to do it.
So I think when you list all of that, and let me just say up front, I do not agree with your characterization of all of that.
We quibble because I don't think I've taken too many liberties.
I think you've taken some liberties. I mean, there's certainly plenty of things there that are up for debate that people would not just take your representation at face value. There's pushback to be had on some of that. But your point is taken that all of those things have been, if not, you know, five alarm scandals dominating the press, have all made ripples at some level, and they're all happening at the same time, and it certainly complicates the preferred Democratic narrative, which is Trump's off the rails, let's unify to stop him.
Right.
Now you have all these other battles going on. So I definitely take that point. And I'm not prepared to agree that this means the average voter is terrified of the Democratic Party and is thinking twice about replacing Trump with a Democrat. It may get to that point. I'm not seeing that in poll data as of yet, but it's really possible it could get there. I do think that a lot of that – I mean, there's almost none of that which is, you know, party edict. This is all or mostly individual people, and for a lot of it, stuff that a lot of people in the party are actively pushing against. Democrats aren't cheering Tulsi Gabbard on her comments about Assad. Almost okay. Every Democrat has called for Ralph Northam to resign. Although I'm sure you would point out, and I think it's fair to point out that hasn't happened yet with Justin Fairfax. But the day is early. We're Thursday morning. The naturalization for women came out last night, calling for his resignation. So perhaps the Democrats are going to follow suit soon. The anti-Semitism thing I think is a bit complicated. I'm not defending Ocasio-Cortez's reaching out to Corbyn. I gotta say, I haven't fully researched everything that Ilhan Omar has said on the subject. I know there's some debate whether she is being, you know, anti-Israeli government or anti-Semitic. I think there is a legitimate line to draw there. I don't know off the top of my head if I would say she has crossed it. But I know that debate is out there. But even that is not Democratic Party policy. You know, Pelosi's not saying things like that, but Chuck Schumer certainly isn't saying things like that.
Okay, I completely agree. And that's why I think it actually mirrors what happened to Republicans. Because the trouble that Republicans went through was the product of this game theory, tragedy of the commons, and people angling for a niche, angling to run for president, people putting their own individual brand ahead of the collective party. So this is exactly, this actually is my point.
I think that is fair to a degree. You saw in the midterm a very disciplined Democratic Party led by Pelosi to say, look, this is the face we're putting out to the public. It is tightly focused on health care, not single payer. It's focused on pre-existing conditions, rejecting a so-called age tax. We're taking on the tax bill as being a giveaway to corporations. We're railing against Washington dysfunction. We're not doing the old Christmas tree. We're not indulging the far left. And Democrats won a lot of red area on that basis. And I could see someone saying, "Whoa, this was what we voted for as a nation." Even something as that's not scandalous like Green New Deal. It wasn't what Democrats ran on. It wasn't what was put out there. Democrats didn't run on 70% top tax rate. Democrats didn't run on wealth tax. They didn't run on late-term abortion. Now, again, I don't agree with your characterization of what Northam stood for as being infanticide.
Okay. Well, that's fair. But I would say, I mean, if you look at the bill that passed in New York, and if you look at the bill that will not pass in Virginia, but the delegate Tran bill that really set off this amazing chain of events. It's unbelievable what's happened to Virginia. I mean, wow. We probably have to go through it here, but it's amazing. But both of those bills are Democrats, you know, coming down in favor of late term abortions. And I would argue, and I think it's very moderate and legitimate to say, like, without making a value judgment, that the American public is in favor of abortions before like 20 weeks, in favor of pro-choice on abortion up until 20 weeks. But that really changes as you go later. And I think Democrats are staking out territory that is actually unpopular and will hurt them. And see, right now, of course, this hasn't reflected in any polling yet. But what happens is, as we get closer to an election, right now, these ads are going to write themselves. There's so much material being given right now to Republican ad makers to try to help a guy, Donald Trump, who probably shouldn't win, probably shouldn't have won to begin with, possibly survive.
Well, let me say this. The late-term abortion debate is the Democratic weak spot in this discussion. Whereas, you know, for Republicans, being, you know, limited to no exceptions for abortion is generally their weak spot. So in the 1990s, Republicans had a great time beating Democrats around, calling them, hitting them for partial birth abortion is what the term was at the time. After the Terri Schiavo incident happened, Republicans seem like they're the ones going too far, taking away the choices of people to make their own whether it's, you know, beginning of life or end of life decisions, and by the time we got to the Obama presidency, Democrats got a whole lot less nuanced about abortion, just being sort of basically, we're pro-choice, period, and that was fine because they weren't getting pushed on the tougher questions. So now we're at a point where Democrats are more ascendant, and we're revisiting that question again. And where Democrats keep getting tripped up, and I find it strange that they keep getting tripped up on it, because the Democratic argument or the pro-choice argument is that this is about a late-term abortion is never like, oh, I changed my mind, I want this baby. It's always because there's an enormous medical problem with either the health of the mother or the health of the fetus. And forcing a mother to make an extraordinarily painful decision. And that's why that's always, this really should be between a woman and a doctor. This is not a matter for the government. And Northam is on a radio show talking about the circumstance of what happens when a non-viable fetus gets born and is no longer a fetus, but has no chance for long-term survival. What happens there? That got hit hard as being, you support infanticide. And there's essentially a theological argument, religious argument saying, this is not your call to decide whether this baby lives or dies, even if it's severely deformed or doesn't have a long chance to live. You know, there's always the Rick Santorum case. We were told this baby had no chance to live, and look, it's got a few years in her. So it's not your decision to make. I get there's a whole complicated debate there. So Democrats did not seem to be prepared. I don't know if they were more prepared in Virginia or nationally. They certainly weren't prepared to be marshaling their arguments to make a concerted, proactive defense of their position. And so they would not have a repeat of the 1990s where they got on their heels and a lot of Democrats, I mean, not Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton vetoed partial birth bans, as Republicans called them. But a good number of Democrats, you know, broke with Clinton on that. So in this 20-year intervening period, we haven't seen Democrats figure out, okay, how do we sharpen our messaging on this? So people understand we're talking about a very small number of circumstances where there are severe medical complications for the mother or the fetus, and that's what and that's why we need to have this option. Instead, you get somebody in Northam's medical school class so offended by the comment that he or she gives the yearbook photo to a right-wing attack website, and now you're having a whole separate conversation about blackface.
And that set off an incredible chain of events, which led to the allegations of sexual assault against Justin Fairfax, the lieutenant governor, which led the attorney general?
Yeah.
Who then came out and said, hey, I also dabbled in black, you know. So it's really amazing. And then you had that amazing press conference where Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia, seemed to contemplate moonwalking briefly at a press conference until his wife. Thank God for wives in general. I know that in a similar situation that Aaron would step in and prevent.
You know, that press conference was very bad. I want to be very careful with my own language here. So let me just preface it this way. I'm going to talk from a totally detached political analyst perspective, okay? And that might rankle some because we're talking about, obviously, a very important subject, the history of blackface is horrible, 100% racist. I make zero defense of it whatsoever. I'm going to try to talk about this in just strict political terms for the moment. I think there was, number one, people would start by saying, oh, he's got to resign. Everybody's telling him to resign. He's got no leg to stand on. He has to resign. And as a literal matter, that's not true. He can be deeply unpopular. His whole staff can quit on him. He could have no political future after this term, but he doesn't have to resign unless he decides he has to resign. And I think he is proving that point every day by not resigning.
And from his standpoint, better not to resign. Like, if you resign, it's game over. This defines your life.
Right.
I mean, Al Franken probably should have stuck it out. I mean, I'm just saying, if you have no shame, and if you don't care about your political party, if you're thinking solely, you're just thinking selfishly, what is best for Ralph Northam? If he sticks this out, then this is a part of his story. But he may go on to do something else, something great, who knows? But if he resigns in disgrace, what's the second act? How does he even make a living? I mean, this is an idea that I've been thinking about for a while, but I just heard a really good discussion about this on the new Bulwark podcast with Charlie Sykes and Jonathan Vlast over the formerly the Weekly Standard podcast. But I think that this is a valid point. Like, sticking it out probably makes more sense if you're Ralph Northam. Like, putting aside what the right thing to do is, or the moral thing to do.
And I think it's different than the Franken situation, because I think Franken got spooked when nearly the entirety of the Senate Democratic Caucus told him to resign. So at that point, Franken had to legitimately be concerned, can I do this job? You know, Northam can do his job by himself, more or less. You know,
he's got a pen and a phone.
Right. If Franken can't have his name on a bill anymore, then and he can't do his job to the best of his ability for his constituents, he looks selfish, and that hurts his political viability, arguably as much, if not more, than resigning. I mean, resigning,
but
actually...
The speed of the news cycle and how fast stories blow over, and now we're on to Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl, and now we're on to the State of the Union, and now we're on to Amy Klobuchar is being mean to her staff. I mean, there's so much happening, and it strikes me, and we can look at Me Too allegations for this, depending on their severity. We can look at people who have said or done racially insensitive things. There are some people who survive them, and everyone just moves on. And then there's some people who are essentially wear the scarlet letter for the rest of their lives. And why is that? Some cases it has to do with the merits of the allegation or the severity of the incident. But in some cases, it seems to me to be a little bit arbitrary.
I'll leave that there. I want to get back to Northam for a sec, though.
Okay.
So if you're Northam and you've made the decision, I'm going to ride this out. It's better for me to ride this out and redeem myself. You know, everyone's saying I should redeem myself out of office. Who are we kidding? I'm going to be branded a racist forever, and I may not be able to get a decent job after that. So I got to ride this out.
Yeah.
You know, in every crisis, there's opportunity. So there was an opportunity, however crazy you think it is or inappropriate you think for Northam to be leading this. If he's going to ride it out, I think he needs to show that he is trying to find that path of healing. He's trying to, and I don't know if I have the exact right words he should have said, but he would have to. So instead of making a lame defense, you know, well, I didn't do the KKK blackface picture, but I was Michael Jackson once, and that's not the same thing. That's not coming to grips with the history of blackface. So if he wasn't making that kind of weak defense, but he was sort of fully acknowledging, I mean, and the Herring apology, the Attorney General was better on this score. If he did the full renunciation of all forms of blackface and further noted, sad to say, I'm hardly the only white Virginian in the 1980s that was doing this. Heck, people are still doing it today, for Pete's sake.
That's actually worth discussing for a second. This must have been pretty pervasive not that long ago in Virginia. And I'm guessing
people
other
have noted, you know, for example, I think it was a Times reporter on Twitter saying there was an episode of Give Me a Break in 1984 that showed up about how horrible blackface was, which was a great episode. And it's true that people knew blackface was bad in large swaths of America, but it's also true that in certain swaths of America, it was not uncommon and not seen as something that was going to mark you as a racist for the rest of your life. Or if it did, who cares? Because
I'm thinking this must have been not just a Southern thing, but like almost like a Southern preppy aristocratic thing.
Well, I don't think it's strictly Southern. I mean, people have point out examples of it happening recently in the North. But certainly Virginia has its own history in this regard, and for it to be this done openly in the yearbook suggests that there wasn't a whole lot of social stigma attached to it. So Northam could have said, "Look, I come from a generation of people in this state that didn't get it, either were clueless or outright hostile, we need to change. People talk a lot about how you can't put the problems of racism on the shoulders of people of color to solve on their own. Northam could say, look, it's time for people like me who have done wrong to step up, to talk about this history, to explain why it's wrong, to partner with people of color, to stamp it out. And people would still say, you should do that not in the governor's seat, but having made the decision that he's not going to walk away, he should try to do it in the governor's seat. Instead, he gave a weak press conference, and we haven't heard much from him the rest of the week.
But then it seems likely, and there have been insinuations like in the New York Times, that Northam's problem was Democrats nationally were calling on him to get out. And part of the reason for that is that they knew they weren't going to lose the seat. There was going to be a Democrat who was going to be replacing him. And not just that, a young African-American Democrat. And
a more liberal Democrat. So,
yeah. And so it would have actually been a good deal. And plus, he could have run. See, in Virginia, you can't succeed yourself as governor. So Justin Fairfax could have become Virginia governor, served for 2 years, and then been reelected, right? So it would have actually been a pretty good deal. And so there is I don't know if it's been proven, but certainly the idea that Northam's people put out this story about Justin Fairfax and the alleged sexual assault.
Well, there's also speculation, which has been fed by Fairfax, that I believe the mayor of Richmond put this out. And they've had some heated conversations, apparently, and the mayor of Richmond itself has denied it vociferously. This is all being fed to a right-wing site called Big League Politics. Big League Politics is the place that has spawned all these scandals
yes.
in Virginia.
My former Daily Caller colleague Patrick Halley runs that site.
This is hard for Democrats because on one hand they very much want to be the paragons of virtue here. You saw that very clearly in both the Northam cases and the Franken cases. Obviously there's been some Franken blowback since, but by and large Democrats really wanted to say, we're going to clean our own house, whether it's sexual misconduct or vestiges of racism. There's no place for the modern Democratic Party. I don't care if you're a better person than you were before. I don't care if you've apologized. We don't need you in high positions of office. We want somebody else. Now there's been a hesitation. Mm-hmm. With Fairfax, and again, maybe that's going to change
right.
soon. But you didn't see it with Keith Ellison, although that may be because people thought the allegations weren't as strong there.
But let me make a controversial point there. Not only so the argument for policing your own ranks is a valid one for a variety of reasons. I've argued that Republicans ought to do that, right? And partly because it's the right thing to do, partly because you people, unseemly people who have done unseemly things can make the brand toxic. And so just like Wimith Buckley wanted to purge the Birchers and the Ayn Rand folks from the conservative movement in order to preserve the cause as a noble thing. So that's a legitimate point. But I think liberals have another reason to do it too, which is the current power structure, you know, is essentially dominated by white men. And so anything that topples them is also advances the idea of more diversity within the Democratic Party ranks. And so like a Ralph Northam would be a prime example. This is like a Southern, allegedly moderate white man who's a Democrat of Virginia. Now, getting rid of him helps them for a variety of reasons, right? Like, obviously, if you want to be the party if you want to be the non-racist party compared to, say, Donald Trump, you would want to get rid of him. That removes allegations of hypocrisy. But it also does something else. It also gets rid of a boring white guy and would have presumably replaced him with a young, more progressive African-American candidate. So I think that liberals and Democrats have a variety of reasons for wanting to engage in this sort of cleansing of their party.
And I've seen some folks on the left saying, oh, you shouldn't have nominated Northam in the first place. You should have known since he was a moderate, since he voted for Bush in 2004, there were red flags there, and you shouldn't have done this in the first place. Well, of course, this is undercut by the fact that the more liberal lieutenant governor has his own issues as well. Alan Grayson, who was champion on the left for a long time, has domestic abuse allegations, and he wasn't renominated in the most recent Democratic primary. So it's not like Democrats are incapable of penalizing folks on the left who have transgressions.
What I'm saying is that like that getting rid. So because historically, white men have held more privileged positions in the Democratic and Republican Party. When you have a zero tolerance policy toward these sort of activities, at least for now, one of the consequences of that would be having more diverse people elected.
Well, I think that there's a general attitude, which is we've had old white guys in the power structure for too long. That's why we don't need to get bent out of shape if they've apologized or they've learned or maybe they've done some good things at certain times and they should be forgiven. A lot of folks say, who cares? We need a cleansing in general. Yes. We need a new generation to come up, not whether it's age or gender or race, whatever it is. We need a clean slate.
Yes.
Now, you know, the Fairfax situation complicates that because he is a young person of color who's also has a problem. So it's not as if being younger, being in the new generation, automatically means you haven't done bad things.
You're right about that part, but what it does mean, at least as of now, as of the taping of this show, there have not been the calls for him to resign from. Yeah.
He's accused of a crime. So that's hard to, especially after everything that's happened with Kavanaugh and others, for Democrats to say, I'm going to look away at this credible accusation of a crime I committed, for whatever reason. You know, it's very hard leg to stand on based on what's been said by most Democrats in.
And isn't it amazing? You mentioned the Kavanaugh comparison, and it is amazing how quickly this, whether you want to call it like instant karma or what, but how quickly the position that Democrats took on believe all women on Kavanaugh has come back, and they're facing some of the same tensions and problems in reverse. And really, bizarrely, I think Justin Fairfax hired Brett Kavanaugh's lawyers. And is it Tyson? Dr. Tyson has hired Dr. Blasey Ford's attorneys.
Yes.
It's a crazy story.
Yeah, and I imagine Democrats are going to have to call for his resignation, too. Whether he resigns or not, I don't know. But I think it's probably untenable for them to leave him out of the discussion. But the zero-tolerance policy that is trying to be implemented here does make them vulnerable to mischief on the right. I mean, big league politics, I imagine, is not holding all members of the political establishment to the same standard when it comes to race and sexual misconduct. I mean, there are examples of blackface amongst Republican office holders. I think some folks have resigned. Now, there's a guy in Florida who's not resigning over it right now. They're not governors, but they're at lower levels. But it is hardly the case that Democrats are the only ones being accused of blackface in their past. And I imagine more and more are going to come out because, you know, there's photographic evidence out there. But you're not seeing any conservative site saying we need to clean our own house on this subject. It's certainly not talking about sexual misconduct in terms of Donald Trump himself. But Democrats, I mean, this is the dangers of trying to be morally upright. It leaves you vulnerable to being attacked by Machiavellian mischief makers.
Yeah,
well, you don't want to hold themselves to the same standard.
It incentivizes it, right? So, like, if you knew that complaining about something was going to get you nowhere, like, let's say somebody on TV says something controversial, and you try to boycott them, and you complain to their network, and nothing ever happens, they don't get fired, they don't get... Like, you would just eventually give up. Like, there's no reason to do it. But what's the old Churchill line about appeasement? Is feeding a crocodile hoping he'll eat you last? You know, when you're in the game of, like, every time there's an allegation, I'm going to throw somebody overboard and try to feed, feed the enemies. Maybe they'll leave me alone if I show them that I'm a moral person and these other bad people, I'll sacrifice them to the gods. You've incentivized people to keep making more allegations and more charges.
And there are plenty of Democrats and people on the left who would say, so what? Wrong is wrong. And if our party needs to be cleansed, and just because their party is not going to do the same, that doesn't excuse this behavior. And this is what takes primary importance. And that's a perfectly fair and sound argument, but it may lead to electoral complications down the line.
Totally, totally. And the other thing I would say is, look, I mean, we're talking about things that are pretty egregious, but there is a thing where at some point nobody would be safe. Like, everyone has done some horrible stuff or some stupid stuff at some point. Now, I'm not saying that compares with what we're seeing in Virginia right now, but where does it end? And at what point?
Well, and these become very hard conversations because it's very awkward to get into ranking transgressions.
Yes.
Is sexual assault worse than blackface? I don't want to have that conversation, quite frankly. But if one had to resign and one didn't, that is a... optically suggests that one is worse than the other instead of both just being bad. And this could result. I mean, you mentioned Amy Klobuchar. Amy Klobuchar being tough on her staff arguably is nowhere near sexual misconduct and blackface, depending on what the actual allegation is. If it's, I was mean to my underling because he or she wrote a bad press release, is different than outright, emotional abuse.
Are there audio tapes of her berating people and calling them? I don't know, but it's within the realm of possibility in a world where everyone has a tape recorder on them at all times that something could surface.
So,
and it might seem, and right now I'm seeing people defending her saying, people said this about Barbara Mikulski, and this is a misogynistic thing, and hey, I worked for so-and-so back in 1982, and everyone said he was the toughest boss, and it ended up being the best job I ever... Like, okay, fine. What if there's a tape of somebody using a power, being in a powerful position. I mean, when you're elected to the U.S. Senate or the House, these people who work for you are not your slaves. You do not get to have them go wash your dishes at your house or take your dry cleaning to be done. But that's how they're treated a lot of times. And so I look, is it sexual assault? No. Is it blackface? No. Could it be something? We'll see.
If we both get ourselves into trouble, why don't we call this a day, Matt?
Are you being my this is the don't moonwalk not an appropriate venue.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. And I have work to do.
I'm glad that you have an angel over your shoulder, Richard Nixon, who's looking down, whispering in your ear, telling you, "Ill, burn the tapes. You're going too far."
What do you got to plug, Matt?
I'm glad you asked, Bill Scherr. Aside from my columns at the Daily Beast, which I think we could admit kick ass, I've done some podcasts. I had a guy named Drew Dick on to talk about how to develop willpower and that kind of cool stuff. Let me see. I had Alexandra DeSantis on, who writes for National Review, on the abortion beat, talking about this issue. And did I mention Sarah Cliff? I think I mentioned this last week, from Vox, came on to talk about emergency room billing, which is a pretty fascinating topic, believe it or not. People being charged outrageous amounts of money for being like out of network or things like that. So anyway, check it out. Matt Lewis in the News, iTunes, Stitcher, and come into Google Play, Bill.
Very exciting. I don't have as many podcasts to plug. I will have, I did do an interview with John Ward, who you talked to recently, author of Camelot's End, about the 1980 Democratic primary. It's not up yet. I hope it'll be up pretty soon. I'm working on a political piece right now. Hopefully it'll be up by the weekend. So keep an eye out for that.
All right. And hopefully we'll both be back here next week. We won't be canceled. Our show could be canceled. From Blogging Heads.
We can't be impeached.
You never know. Bill, if it does happen, let me just say, I say we fight it out. We just keep doing the show, no matter what. That's got to be the strategy. It's the Bill Clinton strategy.
Let's just Thelma and Louise and just drive off the cliff together.
Thelma and Louise style, baby. All right, that's a deal. It's going to be one of those two options. We either keep on keeping on or dual suicide.
You know, the original cut of that movie, they land on the ground and drive off alive. And the test audience thought that was ridiculous, so they cut it.
Oh, man. They made the right move.
All right. Till next week, sir.
You got it. See ya.
Bye.
Before you go, a quick message from the suits at Blogging Heads TV. Blogging Heads will always be free for you to watch and listen to, and we don't even go the NPR route of guilting you into donating during Pledge Week. But we do have a small request. If you enjoy Blogging Heads programming, rate and review us on iTunes. The iTunes algorithm weighs positive reviews heavily, so taking a few minutes to rate and review us will help more people find out about our shows. Also, of course, we encourage you to subscribe to our Twitter and Facebook feeds. Thank you.